Welcome to the Shift Spotlight podcast. I'm Winter, your host and VP of Strategy at GCE Strategic Consulting. GCE are business transformational experts that provide fractional and executive leadership services that help business owners and CEOs shift from working in the business to working on the business. Our podcast was created to celebrate CEOs, visionaries, and the EOS community, all while promoting your business to our remarkable and influential network. We are excited to celebrate your stories of change, challenge, success, and shifts you've made happen along the way. The Shift Spotlight is always looking for podcast guests. Go to shiftspotlight.com to apply today. We'd love to have you. Hey, everybody, it's Winter with the Shift Spotlight, and today I'm so excited to be here with Tessa Maymar. She's the CEO of Maymar Media Group. So welcome to the show, Tessa.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Okay, before we dive into what you do and how you do it, if you could wake up tomorrow with any superpower, business aside, what would you pick and why?
Well, I can actually answer this one fairly easily. I don't know if my why is great, but I would pick the ability to fly. Mostly because I do it in my dreams all the time and it is so fun.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it is super. I have extremely vivid dreams. Not always good, but when they are good, I'm usually flying and it's such a great time. I grew up in the airline background, so maybe that's where it comes from. I don't know.
Interesting.
But yeah, that's definitely my fave.
Awesome. Well, I like that one. Okay, so why don't you tell us at a high level what it is that you do?
Sounds good. So I run Maymar Media Group. We are a social media marketing agency. We've been around for 11 and a half years now, which is wild. I can't even believe social media has been around for 11 and a half years. But it is in fact the truth. And so, yeah, we specialize in all things social media, from organic, paid, influencers, content production, kind of all of those pieces and how they work together. We're generally working with D2C businesses and just focus on how we can build social communities that actually convert to business impact for them.
And so who's your most bougie influencer that you've ever worked with? I'm just kidding. You don't have to answer that question.
Well, I'll just say that recently this is where like social media and influencers tend to cross into PR sometimes. But we were in talks with a celebrity who we actually just discovered through an online post was using one of our clients' products. So that was pretty exciting. And I have to say, that's not something we necessarily went after. That would be more PR, but it was pretty cool to be having a Slack conversation about like, how do we get in touch with Anne Hathaway's people? So
that's pretty awesome. Yeah, totally.
I'm not going to lie. I was like, oh, pinch me.
So, I mean, 11 years, you know, social media wasn't even that recognized back then. I mean, it was like, it was kind of like you were on the cusp of something that everybody soon would make it a daily practice, but you kind of knew it ahead, just like a lot of the people that are invested in AI. You know, everybody's like, ooh, AI, it's this new thing. It's like, no, if you were paying attention, it was there 10 years ago. So like, how did you, you know, tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming a CEO of a social media, you know, firm?
Yeah, for sure. I actually started to get really curious about the impact of social media for brands in 2012. And I noticed it more so from my perspective as a consumer. So I've always been like somewhat of an early adopter and definitely like a bit of a social butterfly as it stands. And back in the day, like you said, it was very different. I was living in Calgary, Alberta in Canada, and Nenshi was our mayor at the time. And he actually had made like Twitter really cool for the city, which I know sounds hilarious now. All politicians are on Twitter, but that wasn't the case back then. Like he was a bit of a trendsetter. So because of that, the Twitter community in Calgary was pretty like prominent and everyone participated there. So I started to notice my own consumer behavior when brands would actually interact back with me on social media, in this case on Twitter. And that was really interesting to me. So I started talking to other business owners just anecdotally about it. And the reaction from most business owners was just like, oh, social media. I literally had someone say like, why would anyone invest in digital when we have print? And I was like, okay, you know, call yourself out as archaic. But so the conversation was just really different. And I started to get really curious about it. And that's where I noticed like business owners had an aversion. And also ultimately, I think just like a lack of understanding of how it could make a difference. And yet social media was like captivating consumers. So I was like, there's a bit of a disconnect here. And an opportunity, really. And that's something I'm always relentlessly passionate about is if I see an opportunity, I have to find a way to capitalize on it in a positive way, obviously.
Right.
So I just started to get really curious about it. Now, there was no degree in social media back in 2012. There's still no degree in social media at this day and age. They'd have to change the curriculum all the time. So that would be impossible. So yeah, I started my own brand. I had just gone gluten-free at the time, so I started a brand called Gluten-Free Calgary. It was never meant to be anything more than essentially like a Twitter account to like learn how to build a community and see if I could figure this whole thing out. It did actually kind of become its own community of 30,000 that I sold a few years later. But that's what gave me the confidence to really step into social. And I remember going to a conference in Victoria, a social media conference, and realizing that A, nobody knows 100% what they're doing on social, which also to this day, I don't believe in anyone calling themselves a social media expert because you can't be an expert for longer than a week. And then the
Yeah,
algorithm
true.
changes, and there's new features and there's new platforms, and it's relentless. But yeah, I also realized that like I knew a decent amount and felt like I could make a difference. So in 2014 is when I officially launched the agency. So yeah, it's been quite a
Okay, so
journey.
you're kind of like an innovator, right? You were building communities in 2012 and doing social, all of which has become the norm. But
Yeah.
back then, it was like not heard of. So how did you? Like, how did your brain get curious about those things? I mean, that's sort of like what, trailblazing is, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think for me, and this, for right or wrong, I think I really just am interested in businesses and their ability to convert. And so, like, the story, one of the stories that I noticed, in again, in myself and my own consumer behavior is I was young, I was in my 20s, and was like tweeted at some bars and restaurants and said, "Who wants to host me and my girlfriends on this Saturday night?" And only one of eight of them even responded to me. And that one that responded, we obviously went, they poured us some cheap champagne for free, huge investment on their part. And we like tweeted pictures, cringe, of ourselves like out enjoying the evening, having too many cocktails. But then it actually became the place that myself and my group of friends made our regular, like our local, for years to come. So I started to actually be like, oh my gosh, the financial impact of their
Right.
responding to my one cringy tweet is massive. And so,
Yeah.
as much
Yeah.
as there's a ton of other benefits around building communities, and I think that's what makes our agency a little bit unique too, is social media can get a little bit of a bad reputation sometimes for being like all fluff and like funny content and cute memes. And it is that to some extent, but I'm really curious about how social translates into real business impact, whether that be a direct conversion in the moment or at least moving people down the funnel.
Yeah. No, I love it. And one of the things, and even I struggle with it, it's just like there's so many platforms. There's so many, and sometimes you've got like FOMO, like you've got fear of like, oh, should, I don't go on this platform, but I should probably post because I know my competitors post there. And so, with who our audience is, which are CEOs, and your deep expertise in social media platforms and content, how do you guide founders who feel overwhelmed by doing it all, wanting to be on all of them, to choose the right platform or message instead of chasing every trend or FOMO of the platforms?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think it ultimately really comes down to being strategic with your social media plan, with your social media strategy, I guess. You can't, I always say, like, it doesn't hurt you to be everywhere. It's not going to be an issue necessarily. And there's always a chance someone might find you there. However, as CEOs and business owners, we know that time is money. And so to invest everywhere means, and to do that, you need to be doing it well on every platform. And that is not just rinse and repeat everything across the board. So, unless you're sitting on like a massive budget, and to be honest, even if you are, I still think it's better to like figure out where your audience is most likely to interact with you and then invest in those platforms and really nail it. And then you want to start playing and experimenting. Like recently, we saw YouTube Shorts picking up a ton of traction. And so in about June-ish, we had three maybe clients that we rolled on to like just a trial for 3 months. And to be honest, I was like, I don't even know if 3 months is long enough to learn anything. But YouTube Shorts is now outperforming TikTok generally for most of our clients. And that's just a change in the last 6 months. So
Interesting.
just a good example to show that like you have to be willing to play and experiment. But if you try and be everything to everywhere, you're likely just going to do like a mediocre job, a job across the board. And that's
Yes,
not the best way to go about it. You want to be also thinking about how your different platforms relate to each other. So sometimes you're talking to two totally different audiences, but sometimes you're talking like in this case, maybe the CEO actually has a LinkedIn presence that they maintain to be, fairly relevant. Maybe the discovery of the product is happening more on TikTok, but then the community building and the nurtured customers that stick around are on Instagram. Maybe they're joining your broadcast channel so they can be the first to hear about you. So you kind of have to think about the whole ecosystem as a whole piece of the funnel, just like you would in any other marketing channel, and see how it, all fits together before just like going everywhere. People get overwhelmed with social media, and trust me, I totally get it. So find a strategic partner who can recommend a great strategy for you, and then simplify first, like make it make sense on paper and then start to play.
Yeah. And that's where kind of, and I don't think this has been said before, but like holistic social media marketing can kind of come into play. Cause it's like you said, it's not just one platform. It's not just being on all of them. It's how they all sort of synergistically work together, just like you would in functional medicine.
Yeah, exactly.
So for entrepreneurs who document their founder journey on social media, which you do encourage, what's the biggest mistake they make and how can they tell their story more authentically?
I can answer this very easily. The biggest mistake that founders make is being too scared to post and assuming that nobody cares what they have to say. And I mean, we tend to work with, larger brands and their brand strategy on social media, but over the years, certainly, have worked with many founders and encourage them to be authentic. We have had brands ask us, hey, can you manage our founders' social media for them? And we actually don't do that anymore because it takes away the authenticity. You don't want someone else writing for you about what is authentic to you. That just takes away the impact of it. People can tell. So yeah, we will, however, coach, on that and say, absolutely, you should do that. These are the kind of things that resonate. Here's a piece of content or a trend that would be really cool for you to try and show up on. And most people are like, yeah, this is too embarrassing, or I don't look right, or the lighting isn't great, or I don't know how to edit it, or I don't know what I want to say, or people don't care what my behind the scenes day-to-day looks like. And that's just so not the case. People just want to relate to people. The more raw and authentic, the better, honestly. So I totally appreciate that. I can understand the fear around that. Even sometimes if I'm going to like jump on an Instagram story, I'm like, oh my God, do I even have makeup on? Like what's the, but it always does the best. Like that's the kind of content that does the best. People just want to be with people. So yeah, don't be afraid.
And that kind of makes me ask. So when people are afraid to kind of talk about themselves or put themselves out there, I mean, do you feel that there's a huge missed opportunity? Because it's like, I think in this world we live in, people feel they need to look perfect. I mean, I don't sit there and post when I have bad days, right? I'm posting all my wins. I'm like, look at me, number one, I'm the best,
Yeah.
But I think that, the more that you kind of screw up and the more you put yourself out there in your raw self, then that really ends up attracting the right person for you. Do you agree?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, in this instance, I'll talk about like our own social media. Now, again, we're mostly working with D2C brands. So our social is really interesting for us always because it's actually a little bit different of an approach. But my director of sales and marketing, I would say, does an exceptional job of using her own brand to drive real impact for our brand and for our business. So she, at this stage, we have more than 50% of our leads that come through LinkedIn, many of them inbound. And she has like an incredible, if anyone doesn't follow her, Natasha Chilcott on LinkedIn, she's amazing. But her best content that she gets eyeballs on is when she talks about failure or when she talks about when we messed up as an agency or, any of those pieces. She's super raw. Sometimes she rubs people the wrong way too. And she's always like,
I do
is this
too.
Wrong?
I do too. It's okay. You know but what? Yeah. Like it is what it is. So, I mean,
exactly.
No,
and
okay.
You don't want to do business with everybody,
Yeah,
so
definitely
okay.
Going to follow her. I think the other thing too, is people are scared that they're going to like screw up, but you actually have a pretty interesting fact about attention span. So like, that's why they kind of say there's no bad press because like one day you're the devil on the press and then the next day, everybody's forgotten it. So what do you know about attention span and people, remembering your screw ups?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's all about being, that's a great way to put it. It's all about how do you be memorable? And first step in that is the hook. You have to have a hook, whether that be visual. For me, I'm mostly posting on LinkedIn now. I'm following in Natasha's footsteps, trying to learn from her. And it's about having like that great one-liner that has people expand. I think my best performing post ever on LinkedIn was I fired my, or here was my performance review, and it was like all negatives of my own performance review. Like some things like that,
I
that
like
really
it.
make a difference. But yeah, one of my team members shared on a client call the other day that we as human beings have officially have a shorter attention span than fish, than goldfish, I should say
Crazy.
specifically, which
That's
I believe
crazy.
is 8 seconds. So that's terrifying. I'm not sure if it's something we as a society want to be proud of, but as a marketer, we're not necessarily here to change society. We're here to understand how to impact them and connect with them. And that's just the matter of fact right now. So you have to be quick and you have to be memorable and you have to catch attention. And yeah, LinkedIn, it's the headline. On TikTok, for example, it's like a massive for you feed. You really have to stand out. Something that I said to a client recently was, we produce this piece of content around the Jays. So if anyone's in Canada following the Blue Jays, it's been like all anybody can talk about. And so
Gotcha.
we were super quick with it. We produced it. The product was lightly featured in the piece of content, but it wasn't focused on it. And the client was like, "Okay, this is cool, but like, can't we zoom in and make it all about the product?" And we were like, "No, because nobody cares about that right now. They care about the Jays right now. So if
Right.
your content resonates with everyone and what everyone's feeling as a nation, then they see it. Then you can start to nurture them. Then your next piece of content that's more focused on your product will show up. But you have to think about attention spans first."
Yeah. And I actually have a Canadian Blue Jays shirt. I
Oh.
visited Toronto, and I bought one there, and it's adorable. I love it. So,
Well, thanks. I appreciate that on behalf of Canada.
right, let's shift gears a little bit.
Hi, I am Ken Paskins, the CEO of GCE Strategic Consulting. After decades of helping companies from pre-revenue startups to Fortune 50 giants, I wanted to create something that every leader could use right now. That's why we built the CEO Navigator. It is a custom GPT that helps you uncover real root causes of business challenges, build a focused 90-day plan, and even expose blind spots across your business that you don't yet see coming. This is not just artificial intelligence. It's built upon decades of proven operator experience, distilled in a tool that you can start using today. To explore further, please go to gcestrategicconsulting.com/CEO-navigator-GPT and see for yourself how it can help you lead with clarity and confidence.
So, how many employees do you have?
I think we're at about 16-ish, give or take,
Okay,
16%.
so pretty large. And so, how do you drive accountability in your business to make sure that you, as the CEO, are getting what you want?
That is a very good question. And the answer is easy, EOS. We are very big and we bleed orange and we love everything EOS. We self-implemented in 2019. And the year after that, we had a 300% growth that year and
Wow.
46% the year after that. Now, I recognize it is also COVID in 2020. So there were more things happening than EOS. I probably can't give them all the credit.
Correct.
It was a huge uptick in social media and digital marketing. So obviously, that's all we had. But yeah, it's been really incredible back then. It made such a difference. I remember Casey Matheson, she's my creative director. She's been on my team since like day 90, which is incredible. Who has that these days? And she set our first original vision. And I was like, how dare you say that? There's no world in which I can achieve that. That's like wild. And it was, I think, our 5 or 10 year vision at that point in time, 5 years, I guess. And we ended up hitting it and within 5 years.
Wow, that's
Which,
awesome.
and that's the point of EOS, right? Like, you can't see it in that moment. You're not meant to be able to see that come to fruition, but you work backwards.
Yeah.
So our entire team has operated on EOS, our leadership team since then. As we brought in more employees, because we reorganized the last couple of years to kind of get us over that next hump. So we shifted from contractors to employees for our account managers and got them on EOS, saw the massive impact that had on our business and the department and how it was able to push the envelope and really like own what we needed them to own, you know? And that's how you scale. You need to start to, you know, bleed accountability down within the organization so it doesn't all sit on my shoulders.
Right.
And then last year, just over a year ago, we did the same thing with our creative team, shifted them from contractors to employees, and it has been such a game changer. I really feel probably the most proud of anything that we've done at the agency. I'm exceptionally proud of our culture. And being entirely remote, people are always like, how did you do this? I don't totally know, to be honest. Like, we have some things that we always make sure that we do, but the culture of accountability and how I know if I go away for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, that my team cares so much about the work that we're doing for our clients. They're so invested in it because we've bred that culture throughout process, I would say. You know, it kind of all, it's fluffy, but then it's also like really strategic and procedural.
I think that the thing you should be most proud about is converting creatives to W-2 and still keeping them, because that's a very hard thing to do when you're managing creatives.
Yeah.
So you said you self-implement. Do you have an integrator or are you the integrator?
No, so I'm the integrator. So we self-implemented in 2019. We brought in an implementer to audit us a couple of years ago, just because we're like, well, I think we did pretty good, but let's see. And yeah, he was like, honestly, gold stars. Like, here's a couple points for you, but like, you guys did amazing. So that's been great. But yeah, in terms of, you know, being the champion for us, technically it's me. I will say my entire leadership team, my entire team. Anytime we do a quarterly, like what's working, everyone says EOS, everyone's obsessed with it. It's great. But yeah, technically I do sit in the visionary and the integrator roles at this point.
So why do you think everybody's such an EOS fan? Because what we typically see here is that there's a lot of resistance when EOS comes into focus and play, and people feel quite threatened. And I've even had some CEOs say, you know what, EOS just annoys me, but it makes my leadership team feel better. So I'm only hearing like roses and peaches over there from you. Like, why do you think that is?
That's a good question. I actually remember being on a visionaries call in 2020. And so we had just kind of implemented. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a different agency at the time. There was five of us. So like, it was a lot easier to do, but everyone was just like, how did you get everyone to buy in? And I was like, I don't know. We just all did it together, I guess. Like, I don't know if I'm super clear on why in the beginning, but what I do think makes the difference now is started with the leadership, and everyone in leadership is a true champion of EOS. It is not one person, you know, pushing the agenda. We take turns running L10s. Everyone just like truly believes in it and abides by it. I mean, I also think, again, in that very first year from implementing, we saw incredible impact. So that helps. Yeah. And I tell that story regularly, you know, to my team, for anyone that wasn't here back in the day. So the proof was in the pudding pretty early for us. And then, yeah, because we did it in stages, I think, you know, we were able to tackle one department at a time, if that makes sense, rather than trying to just, you know, throw it out to the entire organization. Many people didn't know what they were doing. Like, I would say by the time we were bringing on our operational teams to EOS, the leaders that were working within them fully bought in, knew all the ins and outs. So it wasn't ever messy. It was like pretty seamless. Even with the creative team, when we rolled them on, my creative director was on mat leave actually last year. So I was like, okay, I'll be the creative director for the first 6 months. I'm not the best. I brought someone on as a contractor to help with like the design side of things, but I was like, I can run a team. I can implement EOS within a team. I know how to do it. And honestly, they super impressed me. I said to them, I expected you all to be the hardest to convert. But I really think they liked just being a part of the whole system. You know, people really want to feel like they can contribute, and they want to understand how to contribute and how to be successful. And I think we always have work to do in that side of things, but the scorecard, the to-dos, like the rocks, you really start to understand how what you do every day impacts not just you getting a paycheck, but like what's happening with an organization that you're a part of. You know, what journey are you contributing?
Totally. Yep.
I should ask them that.
Well, and so that's interesting. So then tell us, you know, it seems like you've got it all together, but we know what happens behind the scenes as a CEO. We know what happens when your company scales. You know, you're like a social media, you're like a meme right now. It's like, I just got it all together, right?
But yeah, like that.
You know, but like, what has been the most difficult part of your CEO journey?
The most difficult part? I think I'd have to say the reorganization was the hardest, because you really are, first of all, you're guessing somewhat. Obviously we did a ton of research into what other agencies are doing and all of that, but you don't know for sure if what you're doing is going to work. That also required an investment, like a sizable investment. I've been like, based on my business model, I've been black every year, which is great. Not always significantly, but I've never been, you know, like my partner has a brewery and a beverage company. And so he has to like put capital investments in all the time. I have not had to play in that way. When I invested in a head of marketing and sales and really leading into growth there, I did have to. That was kind of my first moment of being like, well, let's see if this pays off. It has, which is great, but that was really scary, just like not knowing and hoping that it was all going to change and in the way that I envisioned it. So we essentially had contractors at the time that were handling clients directly, and they were kind of doing everything from like strategy to design to community management. That was just the way that we had it working, analytics, all of that. And then we started to realize that they were burning out, but before they were full time, and we're like, okay, what? Like, that's not, something's not aligning here. And so we dug a bit more into, you know, they're really using two different sides of their brain, and they're really doing two very different jobs, arguably more than two, to be honest. So that's where we looked to split the role. And that was really hard because there were some people that I think were great, but we had to give them the option of like, do you want this job or this job? Your job doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And it's not technically a layoff, but you know, it felt a bit like that to me, and I'm sure to them, which I can understand. So that was a really scary and emotional time. And yeah, we definitely had some people that didn't find a fit, and some people that, you know, rebelled, I guess, against that whole concept. That's like the most significant change that our agency's ever been through. And I can understand that, but it was really scary to navigate for the people that were not happy, but also the people that were staying were like, I'm sorry, what is going on right now? Like, are we in trouble? Yeah, and it totally. Was really hard for me to like feel all my emotions, but also like hold steady. Yeah, I really struggled to navigate that, but I am, yeah, that was about 2 years ago. And I'm really, really proud to say, looking back, that like, we did make the right decisions. We had to trust our gut and like go through that, you know, muddy time, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember being on a plane down to Mexico, December 21st, 2023, it must've been. And I cried for 6 hours straight on the plane. Like, I just like, couldn't get it together. I had to let two people go right the day before. It was awful. Like,
meanwhile, somebody's filming you and putting it on social media.
Probably. They're like, what's with this lady? The flight attendant's like, do you need a glass of wine? Luckily, I knew the flight attendant. So they're like, are you fine?
I actually do love watching those like social media, like people losing it on the plane videos.
Well, fun fact, I actually feel like the plane is like my favorite place to have a little good cry. I watch a movie, I have a glass of wine, like a really sad movie, have a glass of wine, because I feel like the plane airplanes are like the most public and yet private place you'll ever be. Like, everyone has headphones in, yeah, no one's looking at you. And yet you're like up against someone's shoulder. Like, it's such a juxtaposition. So anyway, so I digress.
All right, two final questions here. Where do you see yourself investing resources for growth over the next year?
We are looking at investing resources into additional service offerings. And this has actually been a big, like, talk about things that are hard. This has been a really big debate at my leadership team. Classic CEO visionary over here being like, let's grow, let's grow, let's grow. And my team's like, yep. can you take a breath? I'm like, no, yeah. What are you talking about? So that's also been something really hard in the last little while. But I am, again, as I mentioned in the beginning, I'm really passionate about businesses actually being able to convert. And social media and all of marketing is not cheap. And I don't want to show up to clients and be like, here's your followers. Like, I want to be able to talk deeper about that. And again, we do a pretty good job of that now. But if we were to lean into tools that are more top of funnel and more bottom of funnel than social media. So up here, we're talking like PR, that kind of goes in the vein of influencer marketing. But again, I give that example of like, we end up noting these opportunities for clients and they're like, okay, yeah, can you jump on them? And we're like, well, we're not really like PR experts. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I want to be able to solve that for them because it's going to make this part that we already do so much better. And then similarly, we already have a strategy that we use all the time for clients where we will use paid social to build their email list because we know email still to this day converts better than social media. So we always make that something that we do. And though some of our clients have someone else or someone internal or another agency doing email, and it's like, just okay. So here we are like spending their money and resources and strategy to build these emails, and then they're not converting and we don't control that. So we've just brought on a partner who does email marketing, and now we're working those into our retainers. And we only are like 1 week into one new client, but she's like, within the first 30 days, you will see the client, I should say, will see such an increase in their ROI that they will be unbelievably happy for you. And it's 1 week in and we're already seeing like amazing metrics.
Wow,
so
that's great.
Yeah, the only thing with that, it's a super fair point that my leadership team makes, is like, we don't want to become a generalist agency, because then we lose one of our three uniques. And that is that we're social first. So we're trying to be very clear around, we are not a PR agency, we are not an email agency, we are social first, but in order to make this succeed, you need these other programs that will just become like supplementary.
Yeah. I do think PR and social media go hand in hand. And mm-hmm. So I don't see that as you're, you know, being, you know, everything to everybody.
Yeah.
I do think that both kind of go kind of similar, but, okay. Last question. If somebody listening wanted to take the next step with you, what should they do?
Definitely follow myself or Natasha on LinkedIn would be great. And reach out.
What's Natasha's last name?
Chilcott, Chilcott. You can definitely connect with me on LinkedIn directly too. I promise to set up that initial call with her, but she usually fields all of those initial calls with our with potential clients. Also, welcome to email me, Tessa at Mar Media Group, Mar with two R's, .com. And yeah, more than happy to connect with anybody to talk a little bit more about social and your brand.
Yes, this was awesome today. I really appreciate you being here and sharing your expertise with us.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me. This is so much fun.
Thank you for listening to the Shift Spotlight podcast. If you are a business owner, CEO, founder, visionary, or of the EOS community seeking recognition for your exceptional expertise while gaining exposure through our remarkable network, we are actively searching for podcast guests who can bring their inspiring stories to light, and we'd love to showcase your journey. Please visit shiftspotlight.com to apply today. And if you are a listener, I'd love to give a shout out to your business to our whole audience for free. All you have to do is leave a review on Apple Podcasts or follow our newsletter on LinkedIn by searching GCE Strategic Consulting. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. We believe that every person has a message that can positively impact the world. We love our community who listens and shares our program, so hit subscribe to be inspired and motivated. I promise to bring positivity and inspiration to you and your growing business. We will see you next time.